You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto, and we are so glad you're joining us this fine Thursday evening. Art Factora, how are you keeping, sir?
I'm busy. Yeah? Lots of shows, lots of work, very little sleeping.
Oh.
But that's okay. It's a new year. I think that's my motto for 2014. Little sleeping.
Well, you've got a big trip coming up in 2014. You got the Philippines trip. When are you going to the Philippines?
So that'll be the end of April. So like the last week of April, first couple weeks of May.
So who's going to fill in for you?
I don't know. Maybe the show will go be on hiatus.
Maybe we'll have to do it from the Philippines.
Maybe we could. We could, we've got those twins. Remember those twins did the outsourcing?
The twins did the... Oh, yeah, the guys. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. So they can
Hiretheworld.com.
Hiretheworld.com.
Well, I actually do use a Philippine... one of my outsourcing people is a woman in the Philippines that does transcripts for all of my videos for YouTube.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She does all my video transcripts.
See?
She's awesome.
We're very efficient people.
yes, you are very efficient people.
that's all I got to say about that.
Yes, let's. And no word yet from that big contest you're in.
No, the Just for Laughs people have not contacted me back and let me know whether or not I will be part of the 2014.
There should be some sort of online voting so the DottoTech Nation can get behind Art and say we want Art on.
If
Just
there
for
ever is, trust me, I will be going to that.
You'll let us know.
Absolutely.
Good stuff.
If there's an audience voting participation involved, I will use my social
media.
Well,
after your disappointment,
I came so close though.
You did come close with app of the year. Now, speaking of, next week, we're going to be doing an app Thursday, so that'll be the first of the year, and that'll be Hathaway's time to come in and strut about and be all proud. And he's changed his email signature. Have you noticed? He calls himself App of the Year Chimpian.
Oh.
Yeah, Monkey Boy is the Chimpian.
I'm not going to say. I think if I had won, I would absolutely put that in my...
It'll be
one of the awards, like on my LinkedIn.
We should have had a t-shirt made. We should have probably had just one t-shirt made and made it small so that...
Big, very, very big. He's a small guy. We want
very, very large. No, extra small, extra small. Yes, so I've been busy. I've been busy myself because I'm doing this new musical, so I've started rehearsing for a musical.
And you've done musicals so well, I heard that you're up for an award.
Oh, yes, awesome. there's a local theater awards called the Ovation Awards, and I got notification the other day that I'm up for Best Supporting Actor. But to be fair, there are awesome people in the category. I have zero chance. I would not vote for me. There's Seth Little's in there and Warren Kimmel. There's a couple of local actors that, as far as I'm concerned, could be applying their trade professionally in Toronto. It includes professional theater in Vancouver or in New York. These guys are that good. So I suppose I should just say I'm honored to be listed, and I guess I am. It's nice to be recognized, but it's hold out no hope.
But there's and think of how many supporting actors there are out there. You got whittled down to the top six or whatever.
Yes, and I don't know why, because not that many people actually saw this show. It was one of these concert musicals.
You know
it was Fiorello.
Do you know how many movies in the Golden Globes and Oscars that no one ever watches and makes?
Yes,
it?
I watched a little bit. I was looking at the dresses of the women, and I was saying, I didn't see that. I haven't seen that. Speaking of which, though, thank you, Netflix. I have started watching. Do you watch this series? It's called The Good Wife.
No,
have you watch
this
series?
There's
too
many
my
shows.
Goodness!
The Good Wife. Okay,
so good.
I'll put it on the list.
So good. I'm halfway through the second. While I was sick, I ended up with the flu over the holidays.
Netflix is your best friend.
Netflix. I would just watch episode after episode of this show. It's so well done. Yeah, it's really. It's kind of like L.A. Law, but way more modern and in Chicago. But multiple layers. They've done a really good job. And then I started reading reviews, and it's got review after review says, this is the best drama on TV. This is an amazing... You know, the thing is, it's because it's a mainstream network. It's like NBC or ABC or somebody does it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that we respect them anymore. If it's not coming from HBO or one of those guys, we're kind of going, it can't be a good series.
Yeah, because if there's no swearing or partial nudity, then it's not a real show.
And they don't have any of that in this show, but it doesn't matter. It's still... It's that good.
Huh.
Gotta watch it.
That it doesn't have unnecessary nudity.
Well, yeah, I don't think so. No, there's never been any. Nope.
Okay.
Nope. I was just trying.
Well,
to
that's
think.
The mark of a good television show. Then
is unnecessary nudity.
Well, if it doesn't need it, and it's
and unnecessary nudity takes a marginal show and makes it watchable. Is what
absolutely.
You're saying?
Well, for every teen boy, that's for sure.
So let's let the audience know what we're going to be doing today. A little bit later on the show, Todd Maffin is going to be joining us. It's been too long since we've had Mr. Maffin on, so we're going to be talking with Todd Maffin about this. Facebook has me just livid with them. Because they're changing the rules of how brands communicate with their audience. So we've been building this huge following. A couple thousand people that follow us on the Dottotech Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And now Facebook, in order for you guys, to whoever is Facebook fans, in order to see who's coming up on the show this week, they want to charge me.
Ugh.
And I don't like that. Because beyond everything else, I'm really cheap. So I think that that's unfair. And so I'm going to talk to Todd about that. And Julian Saunders is coming on the show again as well a little bit later. But before we do that, we've got Paul DeMera coming in studio. And Paul has just gotten back from CES. I think he was talking to you about it. You're smitten with the idea of going to CES, aren't you, Art?
Well, I mean, I love tech toys and I love Vegas. So how could anything be better than a tech event in Vegas?
Yes.
You could check out new cell
and
phones
never
and new
been
TV.
To one.
I've never been. I've been to Vegas a bunch of times, but I've never
I
been
have there. To tell you, I've been to many.
Oh, and I bet after a while it probably gets a little tedious.
The one time it was good was I got invited by our good friends, our sponsors of the show, London Drugs.
Is this the one where you got flown down on a
private
jet?
Learjet.
Oh.
That was awesome sauce. Because the Learjet flies so high and so fast, and you don't go through customs because they pre-clear you, and then the customs guys just sticks his head in the plane and like takes a quick look at your passports, and then a van comes and takes you to the terminal where another van takes you to the hotel. It was pretty cool.
Well, what about the actual state in Vegas once you got there?
Oh, I hate Vegas.
Oh, okay.
Well, I find Vegas a lonely town. Unless you're there with a bunch of friends. I don't like it. I think there's just too much going on.
Well, and it would be a place to live, but...
But if you are a technology fan, CES, I mean, you just... The thing is, it's overwhelming.
Yes.
The thing is, I think you just... It's like you end up... Your brain ends up kicking up, you know, like a kid that's eating too much sugar.
It's like a six-year-old in Disneyland.
Yeah.
Right? Just too much.
Yeah,
you want to do everything at the exact same time, but
and,
you can't.
And you're screaming, your attention's divided amongst all the things, and you don't want to miss anything. And I don't think that at CES and in Vegas you can savor any moments.
Okay.
You're just going from moment to moment to moment to moment, and so you don't sit back and it's you're not chillaxing, if you know what I mean.
All right. Well, it is work for most people in our industry that go down.
And I also noticed you started sending me emails begging me to contact companies to send you free gear.
It was one email.
Yeah, well, don't do that anymore.
Don't do that.
What was it? No, you wanted some guitar.
It was a very...
Oh, the stick. What's it called?
I think Paul posted it, or somebody posted it from CES. It was a guitar teacher, essentially. It comes with a fake...
fretboard.
And it connects to your iPad, and it teaches you how to play scales
guitar.
And stuff.
Yeah. But you know how to play guitar, right?
A little bit.
Okay, but this would make you better.
This would make me better.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to return. Paul DeMera is going to be joining us. We're going to be talking about doing his debrief for us of everything that happened at CES in Vegas.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better. Except maybe
you.
Do you have a question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better. Except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining us now in studio, Paul DeMera, fresh back from Las Vegas, where he was a participant at CES, wandering around CES. Paul, have you recovered?
Slowly, but I'm getting there.
Are your feet sore?
3 days of walking for 8 hours a day and then some. Yeah, it's a little tiring.
Now, where does it get? It always gets me in the small of my back.
A little bit there. But I didn't get sore feet or anything. It was just, you're right. You get, because you're standing up the whole time walking around. I mean, you really don't sit down.
You're lucky. Back in the day when I was a kid, we would go to Comdex.
Yes.
Is what it was called back then. And it was pre-internet days. So it was all about the brochures.
Yeah.
So every place you went, went, if you wanted more information on the topic, you'd grab a brochure. And they used to have these booth bimbos. They'd have these women that were scantily clad, well endowed, that would be handing out brochures. And you'd walk around with bags of brochures that you'd be carrying. And literally, we would actually ship them back because we couldn't carry them on the plane. At the hotel, we would order boxes. We would pack all the brochures into the boxes, and we would ship them back to Vancouver.
I didn't do that. I was lucky enough and smart enough before I went to leave a little bit of room in my suitcase, which was a super small one because otherwise you pay extra to fly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Probably about a third of it was empty. So I was able to put the majority of the things that I collected. And yeah, the bag's important. You want to get a comfortable bag. The first bag I got had plastic handles. That's bad. You don't want plastic handles. Yeah. You want something soft, right? Because you're carrying it around for 8 hours. So.
So let's talk about what you saw there. And there was obviously so much, but let's start with wearable tech because Google Glass is so much in our imagination and what's going on today. Was there a lot of wearable tech?
You know, I saw a ton of different things from pendants to wrist bracelets. The wrist bracelets were probably the most common thing that I saw.
So along the lines of the Nike Fuel Band,
exactly.
Or the Fitbit.
Yep. The whole mindset is, okay, I'm going to monitor you. I'm going to put something on your wrist to do that, and I'm going to communicate with something else with the data I collect. So I can't even remember all the manufacturers. We're not just talking two or three here. There was just a ton of different folks doing that sort of thing and in that space. Sony has a new watch, which I did notice. I tried out their watch last year, which was really nice, but a little bit on the slow side. The new one's nice and fast, and it's an Android sort of device. That means it talks to your Android phone really well. That was impressive. It's waterproof as well. And so there's just a ton of neat things they're building for you to monitor what you're doing, including things like heart rate and blood pressure now, which is kind of nifty.
Were any manufacturers kind of dominant as far as, you know, what you do? Was Samsung really there with their Samsung Health, or was Sony, or was Nike? Was anybody that kind of was really kind of owning the space?
I didn't see that myself. I think everybody's trying to step up their game to figure out what people really want. And, you know, with the right form factor, there were a couple of, you know, upgrades, like the Sony product was upgraded. Mm-hmm. What was the other one that went to the steel bracelet? That was the they upgraded it. It cost an extra $100, but it's a little bit more of a fashion statement now because the previous one was plastic, right? So they've bumped up their game a little bit to make the stuff a little nicer. Obviously, pay more for it, but the whole mindset seems to be, okay, last year we're going to get started, or maybe the year before, and now we're going to continue to polish. What do people really want to do with these devices? Also, processors are getting a little faster, batteries get better, everything just gets better. That's tech, right?
And when we talk about the wearable gear, are people going to have to make decisions as far as what camp they're going to be in? Like, are you going to have to be in the Samsung camp with the Galaxy gear and the phone, or the Sony camp, which typically closes things off? Or is there going to be enough universal things where you could, like, get a Nike Fitbit and use it with your iPhone and maybe one other piece of technology?
I think that if they're smart, they'll keep it fairly open. Manufacturers love to make stuff proprietary. And think of cell phone batteries or chargers a few years ago. And now we've gone to the micro USB. Most of the manufacturers seem to be paying attention to the Android space because there's just so many of them out there, right? And a lot of them are obviously supported with iOS. I didn't see a whole lot of Windows Mobile support at this point, but Android was definitely the predominant operating system. I didn't ask enough questions to know whether everything would work with everything, but I got the impression if it was an Android device, you could load up their app on an Android phone and away you go. So Samsung had product, Sony had product. It would appear that it would work with other devices at this point.
Let's take a step into your murky past in the mobility space. Now, there's the new BlackBerry, quite quietly, has announced a brand new phone, the Z30. Did you get a look at that?
I didn't touch it personally, no. I certainly read about it, but lots of smartphones down there, and we all know the BlackBerry story, the Phoenix rise from the ashes here, and so it looks like the Z30 is getting some reasonably positive feedback from stuff that people are writing about it. The keyboard, for a lot of folks, I remember speaking to somebody about this, because we were talking about keyboards, and they really are something that once you're used to it, it's hard to move away from. Touchscreens just don't give you the same tactile sensation that a keyboard does. So if you're an avid BlackBerry user, and there are still a lot of them out there, the Z30 might be your next phone. It's nice. It's really nice, you know?
Yeah. Now, was anybody else, did anybody else surprise you with anything going on in the mobility space?
Rumors about where they're going with things like retina scans, you know, with Apple's latest technology, the fingerprint reader on the new iPhone 5S, people are saying, okay, how do we, you know, allow you access in the simplest way? So, it's more than just using your password because that's inconvenient. You just want to turn it on and it works, but you mm-hmm. want to still have it locked. So there's rumors about the retina scan capability on the Samsung product and a few other things that people are doing. But yeah, innovation-wise, you know, things like autofocus cameras, just a few little things, like nothing really crazy that I saw.
Going back to those biometric things, it was interesting because I can remember – We're going back 8 or 9 years now that IBM had a really solid line of biometric thumbprint and fingerprint readers
built
that were
right
part
into
of the
their
security
laptop.
System built into their laptops.
Yep.
And it's never seemed to take off.
Well, the way they did it is you had to swipe your finger and,
over the top of
and,
the
and, yeah. and quite frankly, not super reliable. People don't like technology that requires you to think. They just want it to work, right?
And you get out of the way. Have to do it several times.
Right, exactly. It was never reliable with this new system. My wife has the 5S. I haven't upgraded yet. She just touches it. It works. She doesn't have to put her finger in any particular position. Just push the button and the thing comes on. It unlocks. It's great. So that's the mindset that manufacturers have to get to. It's got to be simple and get out of the way. And if it does, you might want to use it.
Is there a bypass for it if you don't?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
She's got a password. So if I wanted to grab her phone and go in and set up an app, which I did this morning, interestingly enough, you can still put in the actual passcode. It's just Apple's all about simplification. Everybody else is too. They're trying to make this stuff like these wristbands. You just, you know, they charge simply, drop them on the charger. You don't have to do a lot and they just do what they do by themselves. You don't have to plug them into anything else. Just make sure they're charged up and they talk to your phone.
Okay. Now, talk to me about the these drones.
I saw a few of those. They're cool. I want one, actually. Multiple propeller drones. So, they're you know, nobody was, you know, saying, oh, this is going to deliver your mail or anything, but they were showing them off.
Well, Amazon was saying that a couple weeks ago.
They want to do that. I still have to see it because I'm thinking wind. Like, these things, like, they're really sensitive to wind. They're not that big. So, if there's
any
wind,
sensitive to people shooting them down when they're flying over their houses.
Exactly. So, we'll have to wait and see how that goes. But the technology is really pretty cool because it allows you to take something that obviously you can fly around in three dimensions with your smartphone. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a blast to play with. A practical application for business, yeah, I guess we could get there. But right now, there's just a ton of people making these things because they're fun to play with, quite frankly.
Have you seen one flying over your neighborhood yet?
No.
Yeah, I've seen them around. I've seen a lot of videos on YouTube of people doing neighborhood flybys and stuff. And I'm wondering about the privacy.
Well, they've got cameras on them.
and the prices come down, though, eh?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Hundreds of dollars now versus, you know, multiple hundreds of dollars. So, you can get one fairly inexpensively now.
Yeah.
And the price will probably continue to drop because that's how it goes.
We're starting to see the results of that, too, on a lot of television programming and stuff where mm-hmm. we're seeing a lot of establishing shots being done of just little flyovers. And you know that they don't have the budget for cranes and stuff.
No,
so they're just using these devices.
Sidebar for a second. I was at the Nikon display. There's a gentleman showing off how to use different techniques to do the videos that he did. And he said, you know, 5 years ago, this shot would have cost $1 million because you had to have a full crew on site. And he was using a drone with a camera mounted on it, like one of the super mm-hmm. good quality DSLRs. And it was a fairly...
Because they're strong. The larger drones are large enough to carry DSLR.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what he was doing. So there's this shot of this kayak going over this waterfall. And the drone basically follows him over that, right? And mm-hmm. kind of goes down. And unbelievable video. And like the guy said, you know, I did this for peanuts. And in the old days, it would have cost me $1 million for this shot, right?
Yeah.
In the old production days. So the cool thing about that is I think we'll see some really good content being made now with low budgets. And that just means, you know, more people can get creative. So that's another use for drones for sure.
This sounds like paparazzi's best friend.
Exactly. Why do you have to stand on the side of the cliff to take a picture? I'll just send the drone down, right? And it's like, uh-oh.
Well, and that...
scary.
Well, and you also start thinking about sporting events. You know, in most of the arenas and for the Super Bowl and stuff, they've been mounting guide wires.
Sure.
And they've been mounting cameras, broadcast cameras on these wires. And you wonder when they're going to start using, you know...
It's going to come, I'm telling you.
Because they've got those, the blimps that fly around,
yes.
the little miniature blimps that fly around the arena the whole game. So I'm not sure they would trust a helicopter type
Well, the ones that have the outside piece, they're fairly safe because they have a big ring around them. So if it bumps into anything, you're not going to actually hit the prop, I don't think. But yeah, I mean, you could put a grill on
losing
it.
Losing control. And then, of course, you're going to have the stadium hackers, the people trying to hack into the thing.
Yeah.
trying to take it over. But that is, and you can pick them up now at Radio Shack for like $120, maybe it's even less, maybe $80 for the cheapest ones. And they have built-in cameras. So
yes.
You don't even have to like attach your phone or risk your DSLR.
No. I mean, they're obviously not DSLR quality, although, you know, what's the one, the GoPro now is so small, you could mount one of those as well on there. And you got like 1080p, or now they have a 4K version, which we'll talk about, I'm sure. But yeah, super high-res video.
Now, let's stay on the camera story. What did you see in the way of digital cameras, DSLRs, video?
They continue to innovate. And one of the things that people are trying to do is take their cameras and make them easier to transfer pictures out of. So, you know, because DSLRs and the camera business has been under attack with smartphones and their built-in cameras. So they're trying to innovate to make them more, you know, compelling to buy. One of the neat things I saw was a tap to transfer. So you basically, you know, touch your camera with your smartphone and the pictures just come out of it with near-field communication. Samsung had a demo of that. And so basically, you don't have to take the card out anymore and, you know, do something. It just moves the files. I mean, who wants to do extra work, right? So they're simplifying the whole process. It's nice.
Did you see the Sony lens that you use with your smartphone as the viewfinder and capture mechanism?
I missed that.
It's one that, it's a Sony camera that looks just like a lens. Yeah. That's all it is. It's a lens that connects by Wi-Fi with your and you use your smartphone as the screen.
Sure.
And for focusing and for capturing all of the information.
I can see them going down that path too, to simplify, you know, again, smaller stuff and easier to use and lower cost. And yeah, why have a viewfinder when you can use your phone as a viewfinder?
And you got to see, continuing on the imaging front, you got to see some of the 4K or 8K TVs, excuse me.
Both, actually. So OLED technology. I mean, what I saw was there's a few manufacturers out there that are building nice sets, but they're not stunning in 4K, and they're lower cost, so the price is going to drop real fast. I can see that coming. And then there's the Samsungs of the world that are, you know, trying to push the high-end and mid-tier television sets. 4K is stunning, and for viewers, that means that today you're looking at a 2-megapixel image. If you're looking at 1080p, 4K technology means each image is 8 megapixels. So there's four times as much resolution on the screen. And it's like looking out a window on a clear day. It is amazing, the video quality. I don't know where you're going to get the content yet, because I'm sure that has to follow.
Well, over-the-air broadcast is not going to have that resolution
for a while. It's only
Blu-ray,
7.
Yeah. Blu-ray is close, but it probably won't.
They're talking about using Blu-ray technology with the super high density of Blu-ray to distribute movies, but we're back to optical media. The streaming side of it, Netflix is moving towards 4K delivery over the internet, so you'd have to have a fairly fast pipe. But this is where we're off to, right? So, and it is impressive. I mean, it's I just recently bought a TV and I'm going, oh, I don't know if I should have done that. Yeah,
that's now were there content providers there? Were people like Netflix there, and were they showing
I didn't see
stuff?
Netflix, no, but it was mostly manufacturers of stuff, like everything, like Internet of Things, right? Everything and anything you can imagine. It was I'm still reeling over what I saw, but yeah, mostly manufacturers of televisions. I didn't actually see any people like Netflix or content providers. Now, I may not have been in the right place to see that, because I did not see the whole CES. You cannot see the whole thing in 3 days. It's not possible. You can try, but it's not going to happen.
So you started talking about the Internet of Things. What about home automation stuff? What did you see in that space?
Well, lots of neat developments there. The Zigbee technology, which is a radio communication technology, there was a really good display showing all kinds of different connected devices, including the Nest thermometer, which I just recently got for Christmas and absolutely love. You really don't know what you're missing until you get one.
Yes.
Being able to turn the temperature up or down from my smartphone. There's lots of control devices. So everything from lights to checking your refrigerator's temperature to checking your blinds and having them open and closed, checking your locks, your security system. Is anybody moving around?
Are the Wi-Fi locks now becoming more readily available? Because
yes.
I think that's a very cool technology.
Yes.
So you can unlock the door if a serviceman shows up, and you can do all that.
Absolutely. Well, so you got the remote video camera, right? Mm-hmm. See who's at the door.
Yeah.
And that's easy to do. I've got that working at my house. And yeah, you could remote control the lock and let the person in. You could monitor them. If you had extra cameras in your house, they could do what they have to do and then leave.
And you could also give people digital keys. Like
yes.
if you have a guest staying with you, you could give them a digital key for their smartphone.
A temporary 3-day key or whatever.
Yeah,
yes.
And they can unlock the door through Wi-Fi, right?
Yep. I can see this getting to the point where when you arrive at home with your vehicle, it automatically unlocks the door because it knows where you are, for instance, as well.
Yeah.
And if you're comfortable with that, you don't have to do it that way. But yeah, it's all good.
And really the thing is, what is the communication layer going to look like
exactly
for all this? Zigbee is one.
Yep.
Wi-Fi is another. Bluetooth is another. And near-field communications is the fourth. So we have to standardize. It's going to be interesting to see how we kind of standardize over all of those, because your phone isn't going to have the ability to communicate on all those spectrums. I don't imagine.
No. Like Apple products, for instance, don't have NFC.
They just don't shoot it. Yeah.
They don't want to do that path. So Bluetooth is another way to do it as well. We didn't talk about that. But
we know how reliable Bluetooth is, which is not.
Yeah, exactly. So there's Wi-Fi generally, once you set things up, most of the devices I have are Wi-Fi based, like my Nest thermometer, and I have a little power control thing that's got a plug in it that's Wi-Fi controlled as well. Wemo, it's called, and you can turn it off and on and do stuff there. So Wi-Fi seems to be the ground floor of everything, and then Zigbee is on top of that for things like the Hue light bulbs from Philips. So there's just lots of different stuff coming, and I mean, coffee makers. You pick something. If you want to talk to it, you probably will be able to in the very near future if it plugs in the wall.
So the big question is, will you be going back to CES next year?
Absolutely. I'm dying to see even more because I 3 days of walking around, I probably saw maybe half of it.
Well, I got a roommate for you.
Art yes.
wants to go.
I'm in.
There you
now,
go.
Paul does snore.
That's okay.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it could be
some,
maybe there could be some nice white noise technology that he can plug into himself at that point there to balance off of that. And look at this. Paul, we had you on we've run out of time, and we didn't even talk audio. How about
I know.
That?
I know. Oh, well, next time, right?
Yeah, we'll get you back on soon. Thanks so much, Paul DeMera, who was down at CES.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
It has been too long since we've welcomed our next guest on the show. It's Todd Maffin joining us again. Todd Maffin, how the heck are you, sir?
Very well. Always a pleasure, Steve.
Now, Todd, I'm going to get a little personal, but you're busy doing wedding planning. Congratulations on behalf of the Dottotech Nation.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we're getting married in mid-March, and I'm totally looking forward to it. Too much planning these days. But, you know, we have apps. There's a really cool photo booth app. So we've got a stand for our iPad. Instead of spending, you know, $1,000 to rent one of those big machines now, you can just download a $20 app, and it works all the same. And guests come up, snap their own pictures, and post it to their Facebook profile. It's really amazing what the wedding industrial complex has come up with.
It's going to be a high-tech wedding for Mr. Maffin.
We have a hashtag already set and everything.
You do? So are you going to do your vows by tweeting them?
No, but there is live blogging allowed during the ceremony.
I think you should tweet. I think your final thing should be a tweet to each other. I'm just throwing it out there for you.
All right. Well, you'll be there. You can remind me.
You'd get in the news cycle. which is what it's all about, right? It's not about love. It's not about finding your soulmate for the rest of your life. It's about getting in the news cycle.
Exactly.
So, Todd, the reason I wanted you on the show this week is to talk about what those crazy folk over at Facebook are doing. They have managed to basically disappoint a lot of people. Tell me if I'm wrong. Now, for people who don't know, Facebook has recently changed how they display content from brands. So if you go to a page, if you come to the Dottotech page and you like the page, the theory was that by liking the page, you would see my feed posts on Dottotech more often in your stream, in your feed. And what did we average? 30% or of the people, 25 or 30% of the people would see any post that we put up, Todd?
And then it kept going down. The latest numbers I heard was around 16%.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and they've completely changed it to the point now where, like, well under 20%, and a lot of brands are seeing, like, 8 or 9 or 10% of people seeing their posts. And now Facebook over the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years has been telling brands, invest in building likes, in building fans, spend money on it, invest your time and energy because that's how you reach them. And now they're not allowing us to reach them unless we spend more money. The whole thing is you have to spend more money in order to and actually pay for the placement of promoted posts. Have they kind of let us down the garden path a little bit with this whole fan thing?
I don't think so. I mean, I think everyone kind of saw it coming when they went public. I mean, originally, Mark Zuckerberg, who, of course, famously founded the company, didn't want advertising at all. He wanted it as a way of, you know, sort of changing the world. And then, of course, he went public and needed to put advertising in place. So this is one in a long evolution of changes. You know, one of the more recent ones that have bugged a lot of people but thrilled advertisers, especially large brands, is auto-playing videos in the news feed. So now you're scrolling by, that YouTube video that used to just be a play button will just start playing automatically. You don't have to click it. But here's what they've done most recently that you're alluding to. And Facebook is different than Twitter. With Twitter, when you follow someone's account, if you go to twitter.com and look at your stream, you will see every post from
everybody you're following.
You follow.
Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't filter it out at all. So that could be a long list if you follow a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Facebook originally was like that, but then they implemented this news feed filtering called EdgeRank. And its job is to cut down the number of posts and show you only the things that it thinks you're interested in. How it determines whether it thinks you're interested is based on whether you engage with it or not. And so, I mean, if you're always commenting on the Dottotech page, then you'll see more of Dottotech content. So here's what they've done that's a little bit different, is we, companies like mine, EngageQ, we do a lot of training for brands on social media. One of the things we would do in our workshops and all of our company, you know, all companies like mine, is we would tell people, create clever content. You know, create memes, have fun facts and things like that, find funny images and use that periodically. You know, obviously put in some legitimate content about your brand and ask questions. But, you know, these sort of use of these memes worked really well, especially photo memes, because photos went to the news feed quite reliably. So what Facebook has done is they've figured out a way now to filter out the memes.
Yes.
So now all of this training, all of this sort of strategy that these brands have been having of finding all these, you know, clever little images to post, they still get to the news feed of some people, but just not as many. They'll only really get to those people who really, really, really are engaged with your brand. So that's forcing down what we Facebook marketers call organic reach, meaning the number of people who will see your content without paying for advertising. So the way, obviously, Facebook wants you to get onto the news feed of your fans is to pay for it. And, of course, you could pay for promoted posts that get there, and it basically forces you onto the news feed whether or not you're highly engaged.
Yeah. Now, do you think that the fans, the people that are reading the pages or looking at the posts, are beginning to develop a jaundiced attitude towards the promoted post?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think many people realize they're promoted in many cases. You know, everyone, especially if advertisers are smart. I'll give you an example. I'm working on a proposal right now for a chiropractic company, and we would target for them in the newsfeed of people in their market. We would target people who are interested in chiropractic services already, don't necessarily like this company's page yet, but are interested in that. So when a promoted post that's on topic comes along your newsfeed, it kind of makes sense. It's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't like that page, but it's a topic that I've expressed interest in by liking pages similar to it.
Mm-hmm.
Where it goes wrong, where people get kind of bugged, is when, you know, you have no interest in cures for the gout, and yet you're getting gout ads in your...
I've been getting this toenail fungus one. It's gross.
Yeah, you know, my friend Rob Cottingham at Social Signal, also a great firm, has been getting ads for catheters for men. He noticed when he turned 40, those started showing up.
Catheters for men.
Yep.
Awesome. I would actually find that entertaining. But so now, what about the fact that, you know, is there any legitimacy at all to brands that kind of feel that they're now being held hostage, that their own fans are being held hostage by Facebook, and they're charging us a fee in order to reach the people who've already indicated that they like us and want to follow us?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Brands are bugged by that. I mean, Mark Cuban, the millionaire down in the U.S., took himself off Facebook for that very reason. And I run a Facebook page that's probably about 110,000 fans or so on it. For me to put a promoted post onto even half of that number would cost me, you know, $8,000-$10,000 for one post. It's ridiculous.
Yes.
So yeah, absolutely. Now this is where Google Plus, sort of which is trying to be, I guess, sort of like a Facebook competitor, is stepping in. Is you can control what you see on the newsfeed. So unlike Twitter, where you get everything, and Facebook, where you get what Facebook wants to give you, and that's less and less, Google lets you group people into these things called circles. So you can group, you can say, okay, everyone in this circle are really important to me. So I want to see every post, regardless of how lousy it is. But these people in my acquaintance circle, just show me a little bit. I don't need to see it all. So Google Plus certainly has the advantage as far as what gets to your newsfeed, but it's also still a bit of a desolate wasteland. There's still not a ton of action on Google Plus yet.
I'm seeing increasing response to almost on a monthly basis to my Google Plus ventures, and it primarily because I do so much on YouTube personally.
Well, that's it. It's Google Plus's numbers aren't necessarily rising entirely because Google Plus. It's that they've tied in, you know, YouTube recently, as you know, because you're just a YouTube superstar. They've tied the Google Plus commenting system now to YouTube. So everything you do on Google, every time you turn a corner on Google, it always seems to want to create a Google Plus. And I'll give you an example. My YouTube account used to be tied to the wrong Gmail account.
Yes.
So I deleted my Google Plus you're following this.
Yeah.
I deleted my Google Plus profile on my wrong Gmail address, and an hour later, someone emailed me and said, did you know your entire YouTube channel is gone?
I know. I noticed that because I subscribed to your YouTube channel, and I had to resubscribe, and I was subscriber number one. And I was going,
wow.
What's going on? What is Todd doing?
Yeah.
So it's because you accidentally deleted the wrong profile.
How frustrating must
that have been?
Very frustrating, and it's not very clear. Now, what it actually does is it hides everything. So I was able to get all my videos back, but it puts it in this kind of state of suspended animation where it removes all your settings, it takes all your playlists out, it hides everything, and you've just got to reconstruct it from scratch. So that's part of the reason Google Plus is, you know, seeing an uptick. It's not really because people are using Google Plus, it's that they're using these related services that punch into Google Plus. So it's artificial.
And I'm still struggling big time with figuring out Google Plus. What it's doing now is it's showing me that it's worthwhile. The combination of Facebook starting to really get me all angry at them, and Google Plus every once in a while just tossing this wonderful little present in my lap. I'll tell you a quick story, Todd. About a month and a half ago, I was on the road, and I checked my stats one morning, and I noticed that one of my videos that I'd posted maybe 3 weeks before had all of a sudden gone from 4,000 or 5,000 views to 12,000 views in the course of a couple of days.
Wow.
And I'm going, wow, what in the world happened? And then I noticed that there was 130 or 140 comments on this video. And I thought, why? So I started tracking back the comments, and lo and behold, what I found was Guy Kawasaki had seen it. And he had shared it on his timeline. And just that one person posting a video, all of a sudden I had in my subscription, I think I gained 150 or 200 subscribers to my channel. I had thousands of views of the video and hundreds of comments, all because of one. Now,
wow.
Guy Kawasaki is kind of the 800-pound gorilla in the Google Plus space right now, I would say, because he's written the book on Google Plus, and he's one of the real early adopters, and everybody seems to follow him. But it certainly made me sit up and take notice and say, I got to pay more attention to what's happening in Google Plus, because it made a difference in my business cycle when you consider what I'm trying to do on YouTube and trying to build the market in that place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that was kind of, I thought you'd, it's the opposite of your story of accidentally deleting the account.
Very much so.
But, you know, I feel your pain on the account side, because I misnamed one account. I had a typo in one of my accounts on Google, and trying to correct that, I've just given up.
Wow.
It's just impossible to make a change so that can be a bit of a challenge. So let's step out of the social media space and let's go back to Google for a minute. And I know that you are really interested in the announcement that came through, was it yesterday, that Google had bought Nest.
Mm-hmm.
So Nest are the people that make the Wi-Fi or the thermostat that you can control with your smartphone. Have you tried out the Nest thermostat?
I tried it. You know, it didn't actually work with my particular furnace. I have a milliamp or microamp or something like that. It wasn't compatible with mine. But it's quite cool because what it does is unlike sort of traditional thermostats where even the programmable ones are sort of difficult to, you know, set up the schedule and the buttons are sort of in weird. You know, it reminds me of, do you remember VCR Plus?
Yes.
This was a hybrid sort of technology where in TVIs you'd get this special code and you'd get this VCR Plus device, and sometimes it was built into the VCR, and you'd program this code in and it would figure out the right time and the right channel. And it was sort of a slapped-on version, and it worked for a while. And Nest is sort of the evolution, really, of that for the home when it comes to heating and devices like that. So you put it on your this thermostat one, you replace your existing thermostat, and you just start, and it's just a dial. It's just a very high-tech looking dial with a screen. And when you feel cold, you turn it up. And then before at bed, you turn it down. And you do that for 2 or 3 days, and then it starts to learn. It starts to say, okay, you know, Steve seems to turn down the heat at about 10:30 every night. So we'll just start doing that for him. And Steve turns on the heat at about 9 o'clock or at about 8 o'clock in the morning. So we'll actually, this device, we'll turn it on at 7:30 so that when he gets up, it's warm. So it's a learning thermostat, which is really cool.
And you can, of course, control it all with your smartphone as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got, you know, all sorts of an app that does some great stuff. They've also got a version now that will monitor your carbon monoxide and, you know, smoke detection and alert you on your phone if you're away from the home. You know, it's just, there's some really slick stuff in there.
So talk to me about the business case, because this was not a cheap purchase for Google. It was some $3 billion that they spent on Nest.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, one of the last sort of frontiers of technology for all these companies is what's been referred to as the last mile, which is getting right to the edge. And we've seen this with very, you know, other technologies like fiber to the curb, sometimes it was called, where, you know, you got very, very high-speed internet connections right into people's homes. And so this is Google's attempt to try to get closer into the home. They've done this before. They've had Google TV. Apple is working on reportedly a TV as opposed to the little box that it has now. So everyone wants to sort of be closer and closer. And the advantage to that is that once you've got a foothold into someone's home that has your platform, the Google platform, you can build out other services from there. So once you've got the, you know, once you've got the thermostat, or let's say Google TV, if you add the thermostat, those two can somehow tie together, you know, turn up the temperature when you're watching horror movies and things like that. Of course, as it grows, you know, when they add these, more of these home devices, Google wants to be, as all these companies do, want to be sort of the platform that runs everything, very much the way that Microsoft was for the longest time, the single platform that ran computers.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard a new term. Maybe it's not new, but it's new to me. The Internet of Things, and that's kind of where Nest and the Philips Hue light bulb and the Google cars, they all come in. It's how things connect to us.
Well, you know, one of the sort of bellwethers or the measures, at least, for determining whether or not technology has truly infiltrated our lives is when it becomes invisible to us. Even old school thermostats are a good example of this. You don't walk into someone's home for a dinner party and go, "Oh my God, what a cool looking thermostat that is." You know, you might with these Nest ones, but with regular ones, you don't. And yet the thermostat is still, even just basic ones, they're still amazing technologies in what they do, but they become invisible to our lives because they're just all around us. So I think we'll start to see that. I mean, I have most of the lights in my condo are Hue lights. So these are light bulbs that can change colors, that are connected to the internet, and that have apps, right? It's got an app. So I have different, they call them light recipes. So when I'm watching TV at night, I've got everything kind of in my house sort of a dark purple, except behind the TV it glows red. During the day it's this nice, bright, kind of almost a blue color. And you can set it at time that 5 o'clock, my lights in my apartment go out to remind me to stop working. Through things like If This Then That, you can connect it so that when other events on the internet happen, they can flash a light bulb. So when my fiance emails me, the light on my desk flashes red 10 times. So it's all of these sort of things. Even Dropcam, you know, this internet-enabled Wi-Fi camera, its recordings, I can look back and see what's happening in my apartment for 7 days back. You can actually even pay for 30 days back. And what's really cool is when someone moves in my apartment, it'll send me a notification, but I can set up patterns. So for the first day when that was happening, you know, my cats, I have two cats, would always kind of go from the couch to the food dish because that's pretty much all they ever do. So I was able to map out a little portion of my apartment and say, okay, when you see movement at this height going from this location, it's called a cat movement, and don't alert me to that.
Okay. So reminders to anybody breaking into Maffin's apartment, hug close to the ground.
It will help if you meow as well.
Yeah. Well, Todd, thanks so much for spending time chatting with us today, and best of luck planning for the wedding. We'll look forward to it.
Always a pleasure, Steve.
If you want more information on Todd, toddmaffin.com is the place to go. I'm Steve Dotto, and you are tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Trust.
Do you have a comment or a question
for
Dotto
Tech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Julian Saunders joins me now from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. And how is Julian?
I'm doing fairly well. How about you, Steve?
I'm doing quite well. Now, I hear that you are making a commitment to moving more into the paperless space in your own personal life this year.
Oh, absolutely. I want to get more room in the house and let the kids run around a little bit without having to worry about all the clutter of the filing cabinet and papers.
So, and there's some new scanners in that space. What, the Doxy Flip is one that I haven't checked out. What's the story with that?
Well, the Doxy Flip is a new model, and it's a little, looks like at the top of a all-in-one printer. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a scanner at home if they have an all-in-one printer. And this is a very small, just a couple inches bigger than a regular piece of paper. And it has a battery in it, so you can literally just put it where you want it and scan either directly to a memory card or USB flash drive, or it has a Wi-Fi card built in.
Now, it does look like the top of the scanner. It's got the little lid. So correct me if I'm wrong. If I have a sheet of paper that I want to scan, as opposed to this being a sheet-fed scanner, I would lift the lid of the Doxy, put the sheet of paper down on it, and then scan it, correctly?
Right.
So it would be just like using a regular scanner. But if I've got a book or something else that I want to scan or any other device, I can actually take the scanner with me, set it down on top of something, and then scan it.
You got it, yeah. So if you have a photo album, you don't have to take it apart, maybe scrapbooking, maybe researching out of books. You can just take the scanning stuff is inserted in a way that has the battery, the memory card, the wireless card, everything. So you can just put it down, push a button, and it scans it. And it goes up to about 3 inches thick. So it even does things like collectible coins, and I have sports cards and that kind of thing. It could scan all that without you having to handle it all and put it inside of a flatbed scanner.
What's the size of the scanning surface?
It's 8.5 by 12.
So it'll scan a full sheet of paper.
Right.
There's
a software trick it has to do a legal size, and it'll assemble it all for you nicely. When the whole thing's put together, it has a little screen on it, so it actually lets you choose if you want to, say, go to your photo albums and then scan some stuff and post it directly on Facebook. It can do that without a computer.
Oh, okay.
So the Wi-Fi card really helps if you're connected to the cloud. It has Dropbox and full support for many of the different note-taking services like Evernote that you're a big fan of, I hear.
Yes, indeed. Now, this is a big move for Doxy. It's the first new form factor or first new design of a portable scanner that I've seen. We've all seen the bars, the scanning bars. And Doxy has had a little portable scanner for a long time. But I always felt it was sort of behind the curve as far as, going up against Neat and some of the others, because the Doxy software just wasn't up to snuff. It just wasn't as good a paper management system as especially Neat was boasting.
Right.
And it wasn't it never had the sheer horsepower that the Fujitsu's had if you were really moving into that paperless space. But this is a very, very different product. This is a scanner that would probably work in a family environment where you have one scanner. You can connect it by connecting it to the cloud and to Dropbox and directly to Evernote. It's got some flexibility that Doxy hasn't shown in the past with their scanners, at least in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I one of the big groups that I see in the store a lot are Ancestry fans, and you can scan things directly to your Ancestry account now, too, with it. So if you're into genealogy, this is a kind of a no-brainer to have around.
So if you're in a library or doing research, you could actually take this scanner with you. I wonder what the rules would be if you're in a library and you're... I guess they'd be okay with it, wouldn't they?
Yep, most likely, yeah, because you want to ask the librarian, but most of the time they don't mind you keeping a digital copy for your own records as long as you're not publishing it.
Yes. So you can scan into an SD card. If they do have an internet connection, you can scan directly to your Dropbox account or to your Evernote account, or as you say, to an Ancestry if you're into genealogy. You could sign into that as well. And this has only been out for a very short period of time.
Yeah, it just came out in the beginning of January, and it's a very affordable product too,
because
it's only $169. So it's not it's not a huge barrier to having to buy like some of the high end Fujitsu's and stuff for $500.
Yeah, when I looked at now we should point out it does not replace what things like the Fujitsu do. The Fujitsu is designed to handle large volumes of paper, and this doesn't have a paper feeder. It's only going to scan in one page at a time. It's for one off scanning. It's not for production scanning.
Right.
But I would have thought it was going to be probably in the $250 range. So it's a good $100 less than what I was expecting this product to be.
Absolutely. And it has some PDF creation software that comes with it as well that's new to the Doxy line. So registered users have the advantage there, too, to be able to get their documents in a searchable form a little bit easier. There's also software from Nuance that you can buy for about $50 that'll let you take documents and scan the text so you can search it. So that would be that if you're doing if you want the Doxy flip, but you want the flexibility, a couple of pieces of software available that add right into it. So it's not stuck in one use.
If you're an Evernote user and you're using Evernote Premium, when you scan it in, it will be converted into text for you as well. So that's a great option as well.
Absolutely.
Yes. And I guess you could even scan off of, I wonder how it would work scanning off reflective surfaces and stuff like that. Like if you were scanning off of, say, your iPad or something like that.
Well, it scans directly to your iPad, and then you could take a screenshot, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I guess you don't need to. Screenshot capabilities. You don't ever really need to scan. I saw the iPad integration. In my mind when we went to. It would marry nicely to the iPad. I was just wondering if there was something there, but obviously not.
Well, maybe if you maybe you're really creative. You took the back of your iPad. You made a bunch of designs on the back of your iPad. You could scan that and post it on your Flickr account and tweet it out.
We're reaching. We're reaching now. So this is the Doxy Flip. So it's going to be the latest. It's the latest of the of a new form factor of scanners. And you have them in the store now. Are they set up for demo in the store? Can people actually try them out?
They're part of our regular workshops. So they're not set up at every single location, but most stores will give you a demo. Just call ahead if that's exactly what you want, and we'll make sure you've got a hands-on demo.
And the Wi-Fi card is included, correct?
Absolutely, yeah, and it's ad hoc card capable. So basically, that means even without an internet connection, you can scan wirelessly to a tablet. So even on something like an iPad, you can scan it directly over Wi-Fi without having to be on the internet.
And what's the scanning resolution?
Its maximum is a 300 DPI, so it's quite high if you're doing photos.
Yeah.
So it's a full. Full for color depth too. It's
Better than using a document camera on your iPhone or your iPad.
Absolutely, by about a factor of four. It's about four times higher quality.
The Doxy Flip, about $170, a new form of scanner that is going to, again, just another step towards the paperless office. Julian, where can people see it?
London Drugs.
You got it, sir. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
And that brings us to an end of this day's festivities. Next week, we have App Thursday coming up. So, Art, are you starting to gather your apps and to kind of get back in?
I feel it's hopeless. It's hopeless. I'm never going to win again, but that's okay. I've got a few that left over from December.
Just pull up yourself by the bootstraps and go back into war.
Need a new voting system is what I'm saying.
No, it was fair. The public spoke. The public spoke. And to that public, thanks so much for tuning in. We will see you next week right here for more Dottotech.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.